Hey everybody, welcome to this week's Hate Box. By the time you're listening to this, it is either Thanksgiving or past, so just want to stop and say that I really am grateful to everyone that listens to the podcast, Maine, and to those that listen to the Hate Box, listen to me just ramble on for 10 to 20 minutes, usually less than that, but you know, I appreciate it. I know that time is the biggest non-renewable resource that any person has, and so for you guys to give up your time to listen to this, that's really cool, and I appreciate it. Okay, so that being said, let's get on with it. The guys like to make fun of me for not doing research and not preparing for the podcast, and I don't watch as many films for the podcast as I should. Life's busy. Don't do a podcast if you're not going to watch the movies, you're saying. Yeah, well, you know, whatever. I won't do a podcast. But I have watched two films in the past week, which is a pretty good record. Films I hadn't seen before. I rewatched Hunt for Red October, you know, after we did the episode where we talked about it, but I showed it to my daughter, and it was really cool. You know, she's 13, so she studied the Cold War in school, and to watch a film that's historic to her and not contemporary was interesting, you know, and explaining to her the finer points of what was going on. We actually watched, she really liked it, so we watched Patriot Games afterwards, because I explained to her that, you know, it's Harrison Ford, but it's the same character, and I mean, watching them back to back, it was interesting, because Ford he's dialing in that performance in Patriot Games, and the difference between McTiernan that did Red October, and I don't even know the guy that did Patriot Games. He also did Clear and Present Danger, and he did a couple other movies that were just nothing. He's not an auteur, we'll say that, but McTiernan is to action films what Carpenter is to horror. It's elevated. I mean, my God, the camera hardly moved in Patriot Games, and I've talked before about, like, too much camera movement and too fast cuts has been a bad thing, but McTiernan does a really good job of, you see the action, but you're also in the quieter moments, he allows the camera to move and draw your attention, so you don't have to have the exposition. And I mean, Connery is really good in that film too. As much as we make fun of his Scottish accent, that he's not even trying to do Russian, the moment when the Soviet sailors start singing the national anthem, he pauses and kind of turns, and there's a nice rack focus there, but I was just really drawn to his expression, because there's like, and it may have been the Kuleshov effect, who knows, but you know, all these seamen are singing the Russian national anthem, and he knows that he's trying to defect, so he's never going to hear that song again, and there seems to be like a bit of tinge of sadness in his face, and again, it may have just been the Kuleshov effect, but that shows that McTiernan knows how to make films. Anyway, so I won't relitigate that. The two films that we watched were My Best Friend's Exorcism, which was based on a Grady Hendrix book. He has written several books. I've read none of them, so I have nothing to compare them to. My wife is really into his books and thinks he's a really good author. I kind of dig his vibe just based on what I know of the books. So he did his breakout hit, I think, was Horror Store. There's some umlauts over the O, and it's about a haunted IKEA, basically. It's really funny and like interesting mesh of the modern and the kind of haunted old house trope. So that's cool. He also did the Southern Book Club's Guide to Slaying Vampires. I'm on board just based on the title. he did the Final Girl support group, which is also like a very interesting concept. So he's not stuck in one particular, you know, he kind of leans towards horror, but he takes and puts, like, I don't even necessarily say a fun spin, and that's kind of my issue with the movie. So the movie is My Best Friend's Exorcism. It takes place in the 80s, and you know it takes place in the 80s because everything's colorful, and they play all the 80s hits all the time, the whole movie, and it drives me nuts. And there's the very, I don't want to say diverse, but there's the friend group that is, each one of them kind of represents a different clique, but they're all in their own clique. There's like kind of the sporty girl, the nerdy girl, and the, and then like the kind of weird introvert type. And so like friend groups tend to be fairly homogenous, and I'm not talking about as far as socioeconomic level or racial components. I'm not talking about that at all. I'm talking about like actual, like, people I hung out with in the 80s were into the same thing as I was. And you kind of took them as you could, because it's like playing Dungeons and Dragons in 1989 is a lot different than playing Dungeons and Dragons now. So, you know, your friend group was people with similar interest. And some of them were doctor's kids. Some of them were, you know, not as fortunate. And that was, you know, but it was, my point is, in this film, I did not get a sense of congruity. The other thing that was weird is it takes place at, they all go to a Catholic high school. And my wife confirmed that in the book, I don't think it's a Catholic high school, because there's a couple of weird things that they were brick pits for me. One of the parents of the girl who becomes possessed are like 700 Club, super, what's the word I'm looking for? Super Protestant, charismatic Christians. I just cannot get past them sending their kid to a Catholic school, because you know, in the world of religion, it's not homogenous. So that was strange. And then the Catholic school had basically the equivalent of, I knew them as like the power team, where it's a bunch of roided up dudes that go to schools and like rip phone books in half and say the Lord gave them the power to do that and not steroids. It's a very weird thing. So it was, that part of the film was actually pretty funny. I just couldn't get past that. It didn't seem like the power team also is very super charismatic Protestant. Don't see the Catholic Church reaching out to him saying, hey, come teach the good word at the Catholic school. Anyway, so I'll stop there to talk about a good thing about the film. So you're dealing with exorcisms, you're dealing with demons in religion, and it's in the quirky fun 80s. One of the kids, the guys on the power team, that, you know, the weightlifting jocks, notices that the girl is possessed. And I thought that was a really interesting take, that, like, you know, typically those characters are played just for laughs, and it was played for laughs, but he was also given a little bit of authority. I thought that was not the choice I expected. So later on, he helps with the exorcism, and then he gets freaked out and he leaves. And so it's up to the heroine, who was the, I can't think of her name, but she was the young lady that was in eighth grade. Fine actress. I just think overall, it was way too broad. It was way too TV movie remembrance of the 80s and not the real 80s. And that can work. Like having the really satirical parents that are ultra conservative, like only watch 700 Club and wear like very bright colors all the time, can work if, but the tone of the film wasn't consistent. It's like it wanted to be serious enough that you felt these children were in peril, but it also wanted to be like, hey, this is cool and the 80s are cool. And the 80s weren't that cool. I'm just going to tell you that. They weren't. 80s movies were cool, but movies have always been cool and cooler than real life because that's why we go see movies. Everybody wanted to be in the Breakfast Club. The Breakfast Club only exists in John Hughes's movie universe, not the real world. Not an accurate reflection of what it was like going to school back then. The kids take some acid and do a Ouija board, and I thought that was clever, and that was one of the things that kind of like brought out the devil. I was like, that's on point for an 80s. You know, I haven't read the book, but it seems like it's very like 80s Satanic Panic kind of satire with serious undertones. But they go tripping, and two of them go into this abandoned house, and the whole time I was like, all right, here we go, here come the bad LSD effects. They didn't do that. In fact, the only like kind of visuals is like there's this weird like statue, and an eye opens up, and then they're reaching into this dark room, and the darkness kind of like coalesces around their hands, like very subtle. So I was like, hey, you know, pretty decent. My only issue with the LSD use was that everyone was like way too coherent. Like one of the girls says, oh, I heard something. Does LSD make you hear things? And the other girl's like, well, I heard it too, so it can't be a hallucination. That's not how your thinking works when you're on drugs. You just don't make, you don't make A, B conclusions. You go A, Y, Fruit Loops. I mean, it's, anyway, that's just my subjective opinion. So overall, it was, like I said, it was very, it had a look, and it had the same issue with Disenchanted, other than Disenchanted, which is the other film we watched, completely unnecessary, too many songs. They both had this weird emptiness to them that I'm going to call COVID crowds, like that you could tell. And I think years from now, we'll be able to tell when something was filmed during COVID protocols, because the big wide scenes, the outdoor scenes of crowds, everybody's kind of clumped up or like 6 feet apart, and it's very sparse. There's no, you know, it's like, in my best friend's exorcism, they go to the mall and they're in the food court. I worked in a food court in the mall, and it was the early 90s, but the point stands. It was very rare that the food court was as barren as the food court was in this film. And it wasn't even that big a town that I was in, so that just struck me. It's like, you know, just even at the school, like the kids are kind of like, they're all like away from the main actors, like nobody is like close, and you can just see that there's like somebody on set saying, no, we could, those people have to be 6 feet apart, these people have to do this and that, and we only have so many extras on set. And like it's noticeable, it's really noticeable. But it's like early like Pixar animation, there wasn't like a whole lot of background characters and crowds and stuff because technology wasn't there yet. So anyway, I mean, if you like movies that if you like Stranger Things, you'll probably like My Best Friend's Exorcism. If you like latter seasons of Stranger Things, so I'm not, Stranger Things is fine. I still haven't seen the last season, so whatever. But there you go. Disenchanted, pass. And we'll see you next week.